The companions stopped at the open side door, but Ryan continued on to the blast crater in the mound. He took a handful and rubbed it between his fingers.
Yeah, soft dirt. Maybe we can blow steps into it with the recoilless rifles.
Not get high enough angle.
Sure can. We'll use the tire jacks to boost her up a couple of feet.
It should work. We can brace the undercarriage with the tires not on the wheels.
Good idea.
Mildred climbed into Leviathan.
I better stop making backpacks. Looks like we're walking out of here.
Shivering slightly, Christy crossed her arms.
Sure. Only a couple hundred miles till the next redoubt.
Better than being dead. Come on. Let's get to work.
Through the fuming, smoky ruins of Novaville came the scavengers. Erect bipeds, they stood hunched over, their skin deathly pale, animalistic fangs filling their wide mouths. They wore only loincloths of untreated hide and carried clubs of tree branches with the bark removed. The destruction of the ville was near absolute. The wooden palisade that marked the boundary of their territory was burning out of control, and the formidable stone wall smashed in countless places. The harder-than-stone black gate was melted. Blasters lay everywhere, but they avoided those, knowing that when they barked, they killed. But there were sleeping horses for them to gather, and there was food aplenty. The dead and the sleeping Sekhmen were piled on litters and dragged back to the dwelling place to be cooked for dinner or smoked in the Great Lodge and saved for winter. The unconscious slaves they respectfully detoured around. The beast had slain hundreds, but not harmed the slaves. Clearly, they were his chosen people, and to eat one would be to invoke terrible consequences. In the crumbling base of a brick tower, the muties found a mighty altar of silver and jewels with a wizened old man sitting in the chair. His skin was wrinkled and tanned as leather, his eyes blank glass orbs, his mouth sewn shut. Some of the stitching along his neck had popped, allowing the cotton stuffing inside to burst out in wads. On his head was a crown of gold and jewels. The scavengers bowed deeply to the totem and left immediately, fearing to disturb the god of the ville. None wished to chance negating their great good luck this day. The hated gnomes with their barking things of smoke were dead. The walls blocking their land were down, and they had a banquet of meat, enough to feed everyone for months to come. All hail the beast. Generous was the one-eyed god of the desert, and the muties happily sang its praise as they began the first ritual cuts into the screaming food. It would be a good winter this year. Keep listening for a special preview after these announcements. Emerging into another of the pre-dark installations known as Redoubts, Ryan Carter's group is taken prisoner in a fully functioning army base operating in a parody of life before the blowout. Its occupants are inbred soldiers, a legacy of the lost secrets of the totality concept. Led by the mad general of an obscene military project, the base has found something it desperately needs in the ragtag bunch, which may bring one of the companions to a fate more horrifying than the Deathlands. Deathlands 51, Rat King. Deathlands Pandora's Redoubt is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2004, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Sound design by Terrence Aselford, Chris Rowan, and Brian Patton. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games.
Cutting Audio. Don't forget to duck. And maybe you should have wipers installed on the inside. Outlanders.
Looking down, he saw deep parallel tracks that had squashed and flattened the vegetation on the jungle floor. The outside edges of the prints showed a pattern resembling splayed, three-toed feet. They were twice the length of Grant's big feet.
What the hell made those tracks?
He raised his voice so Bridget could hear him over the incessant clatter of wind-whipped foliage. She knelt to examine the prints more closely.
If you want an educated guess, I'd say a companion to the Dryosaurus.
Another dinosaur?
It stands to reason if there's one such creature on this little island, there's bound to be another.
She frowned at the print.
But this doesn't look the same as the feet on the Dryosaurus. The claws are much longer.
That's just what I wanted to hear.
Bridget straightened and threw him a slightly patronizing smile.
Relax. That print looks to be at least a day and a half old. Whatever made it isn't in the vicinity.
I'll relax when we're off this rock.
Annoyance flickered briefly in Bridget's jade eyes, but it faded when he smiled in a slightly abashed fashion to let her know he meant no offense. For a long time, at the beginning of their relationship, it was very difficult for Cain and Bridget not to give offense to each other. Both people had their gifts. Most of what was important to people in the 21st century came easily to Cain. Survival skills, prevailing in the face of adversity, and cunning against enemies. But he could also be reckless, high-strung to the point of instability, and given to fits of rage. Bridget, on the other hand, was compulsively tidy and ordered, with a brilliant analytical mind. However, her clinical nature, the cool scientific detachment upon which she prided herself, sometimes blocked an understanding of the obvious human factor in any given situation. Regardless of their contrasting personalities, Cain and Bridget worked very well as a team, playing on each other's strengths rather than contributing to their individual weaknesses. The three of them moved on through the jungle. Wind-driven sheets of cold rain rushed down, mixed with tiny fragments of hail. Suddenly, Cain thought he heard the murmur of voices. He signaled for his comrades to come to a halt and strained his ears to hear over the constant pounding of the rain and the thrash of vegetation. He picked up snatches of conversation. Male voices, more than two, he guessed. He gestured to Bridget and Grant to continue warily. When they reached a thinning fringe of undergrowth, they sank beneath the fronds of a palmetto scrub and peered out at the jungle beyond. When lightning flared across the sky again, Cain saw four men wearing mag armor huddled beneath a canopy formed by the boughs of a tree. Since their faces were hidden by the visored helmets, Cain couldn't be sure if Ramirez was among them. Two of the men cradled copperheads in their arms. A voice, as sharp as a whip crack, shouted something behind them. Cain whirled, raising his copperhead. He saw nothing, but he heard a series of staccato cracks, and the palmetto fronds on his right were torn to tatters as half a dozen rounds ripped through them. Flying pieces of pulp stung the exposed portion of his face. Not really aiming, Cain swung his subgun to his shoulder and squeezed off five rounds. He caught a brief glimpse of four armored figures scattering in all directions through the overgrowth. Cain heaved himself to his feet, grabbing Bridget by the elbow and jerking her to her feet. She, Cain, and Grant rushed back into the jungle at an oblique angle to both parties of magistrates. They didn't bother with stealth. The storm was making so much noise no one could have heard the blundering of a dryosaur. The three of them changed course, struggling through thorns and vines. They found a depression beneath a copse of brush and rolled into it, lying side by side. Cain didn't believe any of the magistrates had seen them alter their course, but the men fired blindly into the jungle anyway, sin-eaters and copperheads both. Bullets thudded through the air, knocking bark off trees and slashing through shrubs and branches. Bushes bent and leaves fluttered. Cain realized that his earlier sensation of being expected was correct. The only edge he and Grant possessed was that in the thick bush, the magistrates would have to proceed slowly or risk shooting one another. Their own mag armor was the best protective coloration. Bridget huddled next to him, trying to soften the frightened harshness of her breathing. The Colt Mustang in her hand trembled. They heard the sounds of men moving swiftly, if not noiselessly, through the foliage. The rain slackened for a moment, then poured hard again. The storm's intensity showed no indication of ebbing anytime soon. Water dripped from the leaves of the bush and down the backs of their necks. A lightning bolt touched a tree nearby, the electricity crawling along its trunk like fingers of living fire. The flash was dazzling, the crack nearly deafening. In that brief blaze of light, they saw the dinosaur.
If you can't wait for the next installment of your favorite series to hit the shelves, Plug into Cutting Audio's website and download it for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com